Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Tom Metzger. Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker in North Central Indiana, right next to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, where you send your donations for the radio show or for the brothers in the POWs or whatever you'd like to. And also you can send me snail mail to that address, and I read everything that comes in. And we'll go from there, because today, I don't think it's a very happy day. I know it's not a very happy day for me, because all these idiots are over there at Normandy celebrating D-Day. A terrible tragedy on both sides. Something that should not be celebrated. Everybody's going to be there, and the saddest note of all, the key speaker is going to be a Negro. A Negro. How far we have fallen. Normandy was a catastrophe on both sides. Hundreds and hundreds of people were blown to bits and so forth and so on. And then went on to what? We expended about a quarter of a million troops, World War II. And that has no approach to the cost of human life of civilians, as both sides pattern bombed civilian worker neighborhoods. In this film I told you about the other day called Normandy, no, Overlord, which is a code word for Normandy, and it showed all the original motion pictures in black and white of the massive firebombing of England and Germany, both sides, where thousands and thousands and hundreds and were killed and burned alive. And here we are. All you can hear about is the Great War, that Great War. There is no such thing. There is no such thing as a Great War. Basically, the white middle class and working class never win a war. They fight it. They're conscripted or forced into it at the point of a gun or whatever. They fight it. They die, but they never win it. The only people who win wars are high finance, psychopaths, corporate people, military industrial complex. That's who wins wars. We got nothing to gain by that kind of warfare. Today we're going to play, I thought, what was an exceptional lecture by D.C. Wolf. And, D.C. Wolf is still, he's still around, and he'll be doing more shows and things as time goes on. But he did a lot of shows that you may have missed, or you're new and you didn't hear it all. So I thought this was an exceptional one he did for us back in, when was that? Just a minute here. I don't see the date on it. But it's been at least 4 or 5 years. So anyhow, here we go with D.C. Wolf. Yeah.
This is The Insurgent, and this is your guest host for the day, Lone Wolf DC. We're going to start today's show with a little discussion on strategy and a few key terms I would like to present. First, I'm sure you've heard of it, a stalemate. A stalemate is a situation in chess where the player whose turn it is to move is not in check but has no legal moves. A stalemate ends in draw. Well, wouldn't it be nice if a very weak player could stalemate a much larger one? Think about certain games. In certain games like tic-tac-toe, winning is hard. So instead of trying to win, you change your strategy. You try to prevent the other guy from winning. You don't try to win yourself. You stalemate. And it's a great way to make sure you never lose. You can't win, but you can't lose. And in asymmetrical warfare, we all know you want to go for attrition, and you want to make it impossible for the larger enemy to fight a decisive battle. If you do, they'll win. And the IRA knew this, and they had the concept of the Long War. And if you look up Long War, you'll probably see a lot of references to the Irish Republican Army. They conceded that the best way for them to win, and I'll describe this more in a moment, would be through making it so unpleasant to occupy their territory that you wouldn't want to do it. It would cost too much money, too much manpower. If you actually look at IRA kill ratios, you'll find that the IRA killed many times more British than IRA were killed. So if you look at it as a strict numbers, the IRA was more effective than the British Army because they killed more people. Now, not to say that they obtained their objective, but if you say, which side would you rather be on? Well, I guess I'd rather be on the IRA side. It'd be less likely for me to get killed. They did have, I think it was a triple or more casualties on the British side. So the British did lose because the IRA was able to determine the time and place of battle. And, of course, they had the advantage of surprise, which is a major factor. But going back to stalemate, I think if weak people, people without a lot of power, can stalemate a much larger enemy, which well-funded in the works, well, that's a real win. I wouldn't consider that a draw. That's a win. And we see that happening with the United States today in Afghanistan. And when we go back in time, we'll look at Vietnam. Hey, everybody's saying right now that Afghanistan's turning into another Vietnam. And you look at the Soviet Union, they went and screwed around in Afghanistan, and they weren't able to win either. And these small rebel forces, the Taliban and those guys, the Muslims, they're patient. They'll wait you out. They'll chip off you. They'll hit and run. They'll fight small battles. They'll hit you when you're not looking. All the classic guerrilla tactics. And I think it's important that they do those things. And they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for a while. Small-scale war, you know, light infantry, I mean, that's been their profession for generations. So anybody that thinks they're going to come in and oppress them is going to have another thing coming. The U.S. isn't ruthless enough to get the job done. And I think it's important to realize that we can stalemate enemies, and it's a major win for us. Let's move on to Pyrrhic victory. That's right, Pyrrhic victory. The phrase is named after King Pyrrhus, P-Y-R-R-H-U-S, of Epirus, whose army suffered irreplaceable casualties in defeating the Romans at Hilaricia in 280 B.C., and in Asculum in 279 B.C. during the Pyrrhic War. After that battle, there was a report. Quote, the army separated, and it is said Pyrrhus replied to one that gave him the joy of his victory, that one such more victory would utterly undo him. That's right. The Roman camp is actually able to quickly replace their troops, yet Pyrrhus does not have ready access to more conscripts. So even though he's winning, he's really losing. He can't afford to lose that many fighters, and the Romans can. So there's no way he can really continue to take these sort of losses. He's also quoted as saying, quote, another such victory, and I come back to Epirus alone. And also, if we are victorious in one more battle with the Romans, we shall be utterly ruined. And it's closely associated with military battles, but it's used as an analogy in business, politics, law, literature, and so forth. And let's see, in the case of justice, it was warned, quote, moral reason must learn how to make coercion its ally without running the risk of Pyrrhic victory in which the ally exploits and negates the triumph. How about that? So We can make things unbearable. I mean, we can lose. We can fight a battle which we really can't win. But at what cost? At the cost of eating up civil liberties? At the cost of them spending absurd amounts of money? I mean, look what's going on here in New York. They've got cameras. I'm sure they've got a lot of extra police. I've heard New York is actually really paranoid in its financial districts, and they've got plainclothes guys walking around all the time. And they spend a lot of money on this, and apparently it's getting more overt. Well, for the longest time it was covert. They didn't want to make it obvious that they were fretting about this situation. But now with the increased number of cameras, I think that if you play up their fears, lots of smoke, you know, no fire, you can make them spend absurd amounts. And of course they're going to, quote, win, but it's that Pyrrhic victory. They've blown all this money on a non-existent threat, and we get the side benefit of making everybody upset that there's no more privacy, that there's no more civil liberties. The more they can step on the Constitution, the more we win. And that sounds unusual. You're going to say, well, wait a minute, but we're going to lose if they clamp down. Well, like Tom was mentioning before, no, you don't. You have to make them upset. How do the freedom fighters around the world make people upset at the United States? Well, they make sure that there's collateral damages to schools. They make sure there's lots of pictures of five-year-olds blown apart on the news. They make sure that there's all kinds of complaints of depleted uranium dust everywhere giving people cancer, whether it's real or imagined, sort of not relevant. It all comes down to making people want to change things. It's about making the population of the United States decide that it's not worth it. You can't beat the U.S. military gun for gun. For the most part, that's not going to happen. You have to win politically, and you can make things politically unbearable. You can make sure that the population gets angry because, I don't know, let's take a good example. There were the liquids on planes, right? So now if you want to bring shampoo on a plane, they throw it in the trash if it's over a certain size. And you can kind of not worry about one thing. And it's, okay, so now when we go to the airport, you know, you have to take a really small bottle of shampoo, or you can't take it at all. You say, that's just one thing. But then you've got to add it up, and add it up, and add it up. Look at all the Patriot Act stuff. You can't open up an account with an insurance broker or a stock account or whatever with a money order. They're demanding it's a regular check. Because they say, well, you know, the Patriot Act says blah, 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 blah. And it's just another one of those things that starts making people upset. And this health care nonsense, if it gets rammed through, which there's a very reasonable chance it will, it'll just make people more pissed off. And then you'll have to do some fun stuff like everybody that's insurgent, go sign up for the coverage, and then keep going in for bullshit. I mean, dumb stuff. I've got a headache. I demand to be seen. And then you can put them in a funny position to where they can't call you hypochondriac. You know, you can make it something that they have to kind of look at. But if they bump you to lowest priority, you complain that you're not being taken care of, and I was here first, and you take that argument that it should be first come, first served, and this is unfair, blah, blah, blah. And you also piss off all the other legitimate patients that have something wrong with them, and you create a no-win situation. There's a way to complain, and you say, well, I want a supervisor. I want to make a complaint. I want to complain to my congressman. And you do nothing but just make a stink. And you have a reasonable sounding argument, and you can cause unfavorable policies to be put forth, or at least create pressure, and at least have something to complain about. And this can be a good tactic, just trying to get all these little things that make America not the country it used to be. And I think after a while, there'll be a certain point when people say, well, you know what, that's enough. It takes a while to get through to the sheeple, because they're really fucking stupid. I mean, they are dumb. So after a while, you've got to inch away there. Can't do it all at once. And hopefully it can expose the government as a police state. Now let's go over another term. This is an unpopular one because it's a foreign language. It's German. It's called Zugzwang. Yeah. It's another chess term. It applies to other games also. It describes a situation where one player is put at a disadvantage because he has to make a move. The player would prefer to pass and make no move. The fact that the player must make a move means that his position will be significantly weaker than if it was his opponent's turn to move. Now, this is really interesting. You can force politicians into taking a side. And if you do it right, you put them in a no-win situation. If they don't do something, they look like they don't give a damn. And if they do something, they bend the Constitution. Or they take away people's rights. Or it's privacy invasive. Or it's absurdly expensive. And you can go down that line. You know, if you look at some of these old manuals from the 30s that were given to French resistors and all over Europe where they were occupied by Nazi Germany, it was all about making things unprofitable, requiring more soldiers at home. They would do stuff like snipe enemy soldiers. That's a good one. So that you've got a guy on sentry duty, and now it's not safe to only have one out. Now they got to put three out or four out because otherwise it becomes too dangerous and you lower morale. So by forcing them into this, now that's two or three soldiers that are not on the front line because some asshole with a deer rifle decides to clip them at night, you know, and then run his ass off afterwards, and you're tying up resources. What's some more good ones? They blow circuit breakers, and they cause short circuits, and they contaminate clean drinking water with gasoline, making it worthless. All these sorts of things, damaging food, spoiling food on purpose, losing tools, putting little, you know, magnesium or steel shavings inside of oil so that, well, at least the oil casing, we call that, the oil reservoir in a car or a truck or something expensive. And it's a lot of things that just like to ruin things and then runs up a bill. I know a guy who was in county lockup, and he fooled with the water fountain so that it would constantly run all day and night. And anytime, you know, somebody would come along and fix it, well, he'd be right back there tampering with it again, so it would run. And it was just because it was an older unit, you know, it had a little bit of play in the mechanism. And if you did it just the right way, you kind of pushed it off the button off to the side, it would sort of lock, mostly because it was an older unit, and it would just get stuck and run. And just imagine if you're wasting water pretty much 24 hours a day. Well, obviously that's not going to win the war, but when everybody perpetuates this atmosphere of waste and damaging things and being lazy or being stupid, doing things too slow. You know, it's not outright resisting, but it's putting in a cost on doing business. It's adding a lot of overhead, and that is valuable. Let's see, some other things I wanted to talk about. All right, I look at some statistics here. And I'd like to cover some interesting things I found. How people die in combat. Number one cause of death in combat. Now, this was taken for in the instance of law enforcement, specifically SWAT teams. 31%, number one killer. Penetrating head trauma. Second place, 25% KIA. Surgically uncorrectable torso trauma. All right, next, 10%, potentially correctable surgical trauma. All right, and what else do they have here? We've got some lesser statistics also. 9% bleeding out from extremity wounds, 7% mutilating blast trauma, 5% sucking air chest wound, 1% airway problems. Let's see. Bleeding to death from extremity wounds, 60%. Now, this is the stuff that could be treated, okay? 60% of the treatable stuff that kills is bleeding to death, all right? 33% is sucking chest wound. Greater than 80% of those fatally wounded by a bullet die within 30 minutes of injury. EMS has been trained for years on the idea of the golden hour. However, most research from military combat indicates that most shooting victims with life-threatening injuries die within the first 5 minutes. Research indicates if a shooting victim is alive when the EMS gets there, he will most likely survive. 99% of gunshot wounds to the head are fatal. And here's another interesting little factoid. Most police departments do not train snipers past 250 yards. Now, I was just looking and rummaging through some statistics, and I thought I'd throw some of those at you. And it's interesting. Apparently, 30 minutes is a big deal. Greater than 80% of those fatally wounded by a bullet die within 30 minutes, right? Well, let's look at how the Koreans fought in the Korean War. When they saw a paramedic, he got the first bullet. Corpsmen, any kind of medic, anybody that looked like they were a doctor or some kind of guy that stitch you up, they got the bullet first. In fact, they started figuring out they'd better take that Red Cross off their helmet and that armband off their arm because they were bullet magnets. And if you look at these statistics, if you can deprive these people of a paramedic's attention within the first so many minutes, look at this, 30 minutes? Wow, I mean, that's the real critical period of time for them. So if you have, your first pick, you know, if you're going to go into battle and you have no ethics, you decide, well, I'm going to clip those paramedics first. God forbid they stitch these people back up. I want a high kill ratio. So that's an interesting thing. I think a lot of guys like to look at these statistics. They can teach you a lot. And, you know, if you play things by the numbers, you can really get somewhere. Now, it's interesting that a lot of these snipers, the limit of their training is 200, 250 yards. Wow. That's put them at a real disadvantage. Military snipers, they've got to go way further out than that. I mean, there's guys in the 1,000-yard club that, you know, that do the military stuff. So, man, they train these cop snipers to be lazy. Yeah. Well, think about it. Apparently, statistically, most of these shots are at the 50-yard range. You know, they've got a sniper across the, you know, on another building, and they're shooting from one to the other in an urban environment. Well, I guess their counter-sniper ability statistically must be poor. If they're not training these guys for 1,000-yard shots, and you have a guy that is, 1,000 yards out, and he's hunting snipers, I mean, wow. You know, these snipers don't really hide themselves that well. They just get up and rely on the fact that they're sort of far away to protect them. You know, they're expecting most assholes to have a pistol or a shotgun or, you know, something along those lines, and they assume that the enemy doesn't have the ability to really use it. Now, on the flip side, I have seen some footage where the snipers are actually in a ghillie suit, so I will give them some credit. Maybe they're improving their act with the Patriot Act money and all these government, you know, terror grants and that bullshit. But I've got a sort of a nagging thought that if somebody came around and did that DC sniper thing with something a little bit bigger, like a 50 cal, that things might go a little bit different. And even if they were going after law enforcement targets on purpose, 10 football fields, that is a hell of a shot. I mean, that is far away. Wow. I don't think these police snipers are really up to par if they're only shooting at this short range. Now, it's good for most of their situations, but for a hardcore guy, a real ass kicker, they are not up to snuff. And I'm going to start. Now, I only took a casual look into this. I'm going to have to do a little more work on that and see if I can squeeze anything out. I mean, trying to look at these statistics, I'm trying to, you know, divine some knowledge from them. Let's look at some other neato stuff. I was looking at some products that might be good for our kind of people. StormShieldTornadoCenter.com. All right, for the hell of it, I just threw that out there. They sell these fiberglass variable shelters, right? So you've got this door. It looks like a refrigerator door, kind of. It's white. It's fiberglass. You open it up. You can walk right down. It's got stairs. And it's apparently a lot of these things are big enough for apparently 12 people. And it's got a lot of leg room. They show a guy laying down long ways. And then, you know, show how easily he can fit. Apparently this stuff doesn't rust. And all you have to do is dig a big hole and drop the thing in there. It's got two air vents. And they've got bench seating. And I guess you guys are kind of wondering, why am I telling you about a fiberglass storm shelter? Well, they're not real expensive. And just think, you've got a underground storage that's suitable for human beings to I don't want to say live in, but to dwell in. And you can store all kinds of goodies down there. And it's, I mean, if you look at the pictures of these things, these storm shelters, they're way cheaper than bomb shelters because, you know, they're flimsy because they've only got to worry about strong wind. But they're underground bunkers, you know. They're a little bit on the small side. Now, if you got big money, you can get a little bigger, but man, if you wanted to store a whole lot of goodies, right, you could get a piece of property out in the middle of nowhere, dig a big hole, drop this pre-done fiberglass container with a door. I mean, you don't assemble anything. You just drop it in there, and you're good to go. I mean, it's like idiot-resistant. Because nothing's truly idiot-proof, I guess, you know, with public schools these days. And, wow, I mean, you got a lot of room. You probably put a cot down there. You have your canned goodies. You have a whole bunch of ammunition down there. Maybe a couple M16s. Ooh, look at that. Well, AR-15s. I wouldn't encourage anybody to get a fully automatic without paying the taxes and the paperwork, right? So, yeah, you get one of those. And they got all kinds of sizes. I mean, you're not talking about huge money. Like, what, 5-6 grand? If you get a big one, I'd say, you know, if you're going to do it right, get the big one. And let's see, they're showing all these different setups. A lot of times they have these bulldozers come out, dig the hole real quick. If you had to do it on your own, these fiberglass shells aren't so heavy that you couldn't move it yourself with a pickup truck and, you know, probably you and a buddy or something, you know, really get it going. Maybe do it all yourself if you're strong enough. And, wow, I mean, these things look invisible when they put it there. And I've seen some of these where they've got it installed in dirt, and the door itself is dirt color. You know, it's dark brown. And these things are invisible. So, wow. The other thing I was thinking of was shipping containers. You got a 20-foot and a 40-foot, and they're both very common. And you can actually go to companies, there's one called Mini Storage, to where they actually sell these 40-foot or 20-foot, but I recommend the 40. It's been drywalled inside. It's got electrical sockets. It's got flooring put down. It's got like this vinyl tile industrial stuff. And you've got a perfectly nice, it's got an air conditioner. It's totally set up so you can stick a generator on it, or I'll talk to you in a minute about putting solar on it. But, wow, I mean, you know, for only a couple grand, I think these things go for like the $4,000 range, $4,000 to $6,000 for one of these. It's super high security. I mean, if you've ever tried and break into a shipping container, it looks hard as hell. They have the most drill resistant locks you'll ever see. They look like a donut. And it slips on top of the of this locking mechanism, and it's not like a padlock. You know, a padlock you can break off like it ain't shit. But these doors have, it's like, you know, each corner of the door can take a padlock, and it has this lock in the middle that is really, really heavy duty. I mean, it is a real pain in the ass. It'd be 100 times easier to break in your house than to break into this damn thing. Because there's no windows, it's all metal, and it's thick metal at that. So, yeah, very unattractive to intruders, to say the least. And it's like trying to break into a safe almost. Maybe it's marginally easier than breaking into a safe, but not by a lot. And these things are great. You can use some more goodies to kind of upgrade these. You'll see where I'm going with this. Hopefully you've heard of an atmospheric water generator. All right, this is a, I almost say it's a new thing, but it's starting to come around. What it is, it's a dehumidifier that has a purification system on it. And you're thinking, wow, that's unusual. Well, you can get these units. They're like a water fountain. So imagine something the size of a water fountain, one of the stand-up ones. And it can provide you, let's see, the cheapest model that's being sold at this particular vendor does 20 liters every 24 hours. And it uses UV sterilization. It's got a filter. I mean, this baby's got the works. And I'm looking at AtlantisSolar.com, AtlantisSolar.com. And not that they have any kind of monopoly on these things. There's plenty of vendors. I'm just throwing them out there so you can look at one of them real quick. But it's great. You know, you can have a setup in the middle of nowhere, and you're thinking, damn, how am I going to get drinking water? Well, woof, there's your answer. And if it's making 24, the cheapest unit they got is 24 liters an hour, well, you're getting somewhere. Now you got really clean drinking water, and hopefully you can have some surplus for washing. But, you know, you can use rainwater for that or something you collect or stream or whatever. But when it comes to clean water to drink, I mean, that's, and cook with and brush your teeth with, that's really useful. These things run about a grand. New. I haven't seen a used one laying around, but, you know, keep that in mind. Now, you've got this other thing called a solar generator. And these are interesting. It's a completely self-contained solar power setup. Now, here's how it works. You've got a solar panel to stick outside, and it comes on this little rack with a wheel, wheels on it, so you can turn it to the sun so that it's as efficient as possible. And you've got this, it looks like a desktop computer. You know, it's about that kind of size. And it's got a power inverter, so it gives you AC power, and it has a large lead-acid battery. Imagine, like, it's probably like a car battery or something in there. And it's got 1,800 volts. It says here, will run a fridge, freezer, sump pump, and a 1,000-watt microwave, fish tank light, an air pump, home alarm system, and garage door. Wow. Will run all essential electronics, such as 20-inch TV, radio, fan, cordless phone, mobile phone, laptop, emergency light. Well, look at this. Let's see. Can run a laptop, desktop, 20-inch LCD monitor or CRT monitor, 600-watt office lamp, inkjet printer, copier, fax printer, scanner, internet modem. The whole works. Now, not that I run it all at once by any stretch, but apparently it'll provide enough power to do several things. And this is amazing because it can give you an immediate capability to run off the grid. So you can run a laptop. I forget how long it was exactly. they had a chart, and it would tell you a lot of really popular things to run, and it would tell you how long it could run. I think it was like 56 hours off of one charge. It could run a cell phone for. It could run a laptop. I think it was like 20 or 30 hours, just on battery power alone. And I think it's important that all of us get at least a limited ability to be off the grid. And if you've got something that's extremely portable that you could take somewhere on a whim, that gives us a really important advantage. Just imagine if we put all these things together, you can not need utilities. Now, I got the specs here. It says max power 1800 watts, continuous power 1440 watts, surge rating 2880 watts, output continuous 12 amps, output voltage 115 plus minus 10 volts AC, runs at 60 hertz plus or minus a hertz. It's a modified sine wave. And the important thing, that's not a true sine wave, and there's a couple things that can whine if they don't have a true sine wave, and I forget what some of them are. But yeah, that's the thing that happens with solar panels. Oh, sorry, solar panel. Power, I mean. There's a couple appliances that can hum or do something annoying if you get them, if you hook them up to one of these almost a sine wave units. But if you get the DC direct current version of that appliance, you can get rid of that. If you look up backwoodsolar.com, they know everything, and they put a lot of information on the website for everyone to see. And you can find out which things have a tendency to hum. I can't think of what they are right off the top of my head. But it's got a I think 5 sockets built in it. Oh, here we go. This is the PowerHub 1800. A laptop will run for 22 hours. An inkjet printer, 218 hours. A cell phone, 396 hours. Table lamp, 54 hours. TV, 49 hours. Well, this is an LCD, 17-inch TV. Table lamp, 43 hours. Let's see, alarm clock radio, 218 hours. 20-inch LCD TV, 3 hours, 20 minutes. Let's see, an 18-cubic-foot fridge, 15 hours. An 8-cubic-foot freezer, 20 hours. I can run a sump pump for 4 hours. I'll run a microwave for an hour, 43 minutes. Well, hey, this is pretty good. You guys should start looking into this. These units start at about the... let's say $1,200 mark, $1,500 mark. There's a lot of guys selling these solar generators, and I think they're really worth looking into. Another one from a different maker, SpheroSolar.com. We're selling this one for $1,100, and it's everything to go. It's two things. It's a box on wheels, so you don't have all these wires and bullshit hanging out. And you just plug into it. It's got a battery built in, the inverter, the whole bit, and this 80-watt solar panel that you stick outside. And I'm looking at this thing here. I wish I had one to test and tell you guys how they are. And they all look nice. I think it's a great idea. And they've got another one here for $3,000. I'm sure it can just run a whole lot more stuff. Getting a spot off the grid, there's a couple ways you can do it. I mentioned a shipping container, which you can buy the versions that have been retrofitted into secure offices, okay? Or you can do that yourself, but, I mean, these guys have drywalled it and everything. I think it's a great idea. You can put this out in the middle of nowhere, spray paint this baby, dark green or brown, or hopefully get one that's already been done that way professionally. And you don't have to draw a lot of attention to it. Put some shrubs and some bullshit plants around it. Put up some camo netting if you really wanted to. Do this in a woodsy area. where, you know, there aren't a whole lot of people, man, you can really get yourself out of the way. And I was thinking, if you wanted to be really fancy, you could, I don't know, dig a hole and into, like, let's say you find a hill and you cut out a hole of the size of this thing and shove this container right in that hole. And I don't know if you can put dirt and soil in direct contact with this, but perhaps make up some kind of retaining wall and have the earth not touch it, but still, I mean, pretty well hidden. And possibly put a board over top of that little retaining wall you'd make, and cover that up with dirt or, I don't know, something so you can keep airflow around it. There must be some good ways. Maybe there's a handyman that would know how to make a really cheap, really hard to find bunker. I mean, actual bunker for you guys. And hopefully you get a piece of land in the middle of nowhere, like West Virginia, for example, up where land is cheap as hell and there's nobody around. And even if somebody saw it, they wouldn't give a damn. You know, people putting trailers out there and stuff. I mean, there must be a way for you guys to have a base of operations, something far away from where you are, where nobody knows where this thing is. You could have the ground above ground and kind of camouflaged. Looks like storage. No one expect anything. You get this water generator. You got a chemical toilet or something like that. You get yourself a solar generator. Hey, man, you can use a cell phone. You get a satellite TV. Now, think about this, all right? It sounds a little outrageous, but we're some outrageous folk. You got this cheap, I would say an asterisk, you know, I would say reasonably priced shelter, all right? And you got a satellite TV, you know, direct TV or whatever, pointed towards the southwest sky, and you've got TV service, all right? Get yourself a basic cable. And you get this atmospheric water generator. Well, let's see, what's cable going to cost you? I don't know, maybe like $300 to start. I'm sure they could give you an attractive price, probably something better than that. But let's say a couple $100 for cable, at least for a while. Maybe a year subscription. And then you get, I don't know, that atmospheric water generator, that's $1,000. All right, you could always do the Deer Park water thing, have one of those Deer Park water dispensers, and go buy the big 5-gallon jugs, or at least see the film up yourself, whatever. And, all right, so you got that. And you buy a whole bunch of canned goods, that's not too expensive. A couple bucks for those, you know, they would have like, what, a 3-year shelf life or something? Get yourself one of these solar generator setups. Now you're looking at, I don't know, maybe $2,000 for a nice one, $3,000, something like that. And now you can run your satellite TV, a little TV, and a laptop, and charge up your cell phone. And if you get one of those cellular modems, you can use that. Or you can even get two-way satellite internet, right? You've got a lot of options to go out kind of in the middle of nowhere with all this advanced technology we have today and stay off the grid. You know, you can get, if you go to backwoodsolar.com, you'll find out that you can buy propane refrigerators, obviously stoves. You get a marine stove that runs off of compressed gases, you know, like a propane or whatever. It's very compact. And before you know it, you realize that you could be out somewhere, have all this stuff self-contained, and really be able to support yourself and not be miserable. I mean, I think this is great, and you guys need to do it. And this is a good use of some of your extra money. And I'd say, even if you don't have the extra money, work something out, find a place to put one of these things, get a guy to agree to it, maybe slip a couple bucks a month, and get yourself out there. And I don't think you can afford not to do it, to be honest. And if, you know, you're one of those guys that loves to have 10,000 rounds of ammunition just sitting around, you know, and, 20 shotguns and 50 AKs, well, maybe that's the kind of place to put it, not your house. because no one's going to know about this thing. You know, you're going to have the cops come. They're going to come to your house. They're not going to come to your crazy shipping container that's full of goodies and food and spare clothes and could actually hold you over for a minute if it had to. So you can think of it as your home away from home. You can have it as your office. Have all your insurgency stuff out there and not catch any funny looks. And if you had it in the ground, like one of those underground storm shelters, man, they're invisible. And they can, trust me, if they can fit a good, you know, 10 people or whatever to ride out a storm, they could clearly store a lot of your supplies. And they're designed to be watertight. Now that I've mentioned that and got that out of the way, I thought that was an important thing to bring up. Let's talk about some neato stuff that the Zog is buying. Has anyone here heard of BioCheck Powder Screening Test Kit? Well, I have. And let me tell you about this stuff. Why is this product useful? The BioCheck Kit provides a fast, simple, inexpensive test for first responders to rapidly screen suspicious powder samples for the presence of a bioterror agent. This reduces the need for time-consuming, expensive, specific agent field and lab tests, and because the majority of ordinary substances, sugar, drywall dust, cornstarch, that frequently cause alarms, will not set this test off. All right. Use of the product greatly reduces the fear, cost, and inconvenience associated with a false alarm. Ooh. How does the kit work? The kit measures the presence or absence of protein in a sample. Yeah. The protein is shown by a change to the color purple in the protein solution in the test. Now that means there's a possible biological agent that may be present. All biological materials and toxins contain protein. A pH test is included to provide further information about the sample. Samples are collected using a test swab. The BioCheck kit was tested in more than 50 actual calls. In 87% of the cases, the suspicious material was bullshit. Powdered sugar, drywall dust. It could be ruled out immediately as a bioterror agent. Common safe substances that would give a positive result with the product, such as whole wheat flour and yeast, rarely cause citizens to call 911. Well, I think what they're really trying to say is if you use baking yeast, this test will give you a false positive and it will think that it's some dangerous shit when it's just baking powder. Yeast. Baking powder is different. Let's see. What does the federal government think of these tests? DHS recommends the use of protein and pH testing of suspicious samples. Ooh. Who is this product for? Well, it's for qualified personnel to provide an initial assessment of powders suspected of being bioterrorism agents. A positive result means that a protein is present. Further testing must be done to determine what biohazardous material it might be. As a rapid screen, it can save time compared to expensive agent detection by labs and hazmat teams. Let's see, what's the sensitivity of the kit? Well, it's for the detection of visible amounts of toxins or pathogens. The anthrax letter mailed to Senator Dashiell contained gram amounts of material and would have been able to successfully detect the anthrax product. Mm-hmm. Let's see if you can see it. It's enough for testing. Let's see. If the biohazard kit shows the presence of protein, does this mean the sample is a biohazard? No, it needs that you must test it some more. Safe substances such as yeast and pancake mix will test positive for protein. Oh, what is the incidence of false positives? Well, field test shows that there is protein in less than 20% of the samples tested. All right. So there's at least 80% chance if this shit rings off, it's probably the real deal. In less than 20% of the time, did you get a false positive? Wow, that is going to make Zog piss their pants that they've got some shit when this thing goes off, because it's right over 80% of the time. Wow. Let's see. What about false negatives with this kit? The incidence of false negatives is virtually zero. Let's see. You've got a control, which is the most important. In the event that a test is negative for the presence of protein, the control swab should be added to the protein test solution. In most instances, the protein test will turn purple within 5 minutes after addition of the control swab. If that doesn't work, it shows the kit is not working. You must take the reading within 15 minutes of the test. It is important to note that potentially fatal quantities of biological agents can be dispensed in quantities that cannot be detected by this product. Let's see. How often will the kit give a positive result for protein? In field tests for more than 50 incidents, BioCheck ruled out as bioterror threats more than 85% of the substances that cause citizens to call 911. Product is good for 14 months. Testing is underway to prove it is good up to 18 months. Let's see. What does the pH test do? That's another part of their thing. The pH test indicates whether the material being tested is acidic. pH solution turns reddish pink. Basic pH turns blue, or neutral pH does not change color. It stays pale yellow or light orange. Now, what is the purpose of this pH testing? Well, it gives you extra information about the sample. Materials that contain dangerous bioterrorism agents are usually neutral pH. A neutral pH will not cause a color change in the solution. In addition, a change in color to reddish pink indicates acidic material. Acidic materials may cause the protein test to fail so that the pH can assist in explaining the performance of the protein test. In the vast majority, most substances had a neutral pH. So let's see. If the protein test changes color, indicating the presence of protein, how long will this color remain? 5 minutes. How do you order the product? Well, you call 866-572-2020. And that's called the 2020 BioResponse Test Kit. How about that? It is a product of 2020 Gene Systems Incorporated. Wow. Well, you know what? I bet if there was some asshole that was going to start some kind of hoax, I bet if they ended up taking what they recommended, well, what they mentioned in here, which would be baker's yeast, and that got, you know, spilled somewhere, and then everybody, you know, wants to worry about the bullshit terrorism. Well, can you imagine the cops coming out to this shit, suspicious powder call? They got this field test more than 80% reliable. They put the swab on there, and it kicks back positive. These motherfuckers will shit themselves. Can you imagine this? Let's see. What do you think they're probably going to do? I bet they're probably going to close down the whole goddamn joint. The place is going to be swarming with cops. It's going to be all over the news. It's going to be a huge to-do. And you know these cops, they fucking feed off this shit. They love having a big scene, you know. And all of this money will be spent, you know, overtime, lab testing fees. We got to get the SWAT team there, the hazmat crew, and they get the guy in the fucking spacesuit who's going to be walking up to some fucking bullshit powder, you know, baker's yeast, and all because of this thing is a shitty testing kit. You know, it's probably a real cheap kit, and you got the number here to buy it if you want. You know, I can waste my money on the bullshit. But can you imagine, you know, having these guys test this shit, and man, you know, they believe their own press. You know, I think this terrorism thing, a lot of it's a hoax. I think it's bullshit. They just want to scare people. But, you know, it's like they believe their own press. They believe their own bullshit. So when they get out there, oh my God, it could be. Oh my God, it might be it. It's Al-Qaeda. Oh my God. You know, they get themselves all ready to pass out over nonsense. Now, can you imagine the ridiculous amount of money that would be spent because this little inefficient test said that this could be some dangerous bacteria? And then, of course, when they test it negative for anthrax, you know, the number one thing they're all worried about, well, then they're going, is it something else? We got to test it for this, and for this, and for this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And before you know it, they've run 100 tests on this damn bullshit. And they've blown huge money on laboratory stuff and time for the people to do it. In the meantime, they're on lockdown, and rumors circulate and fly about. And at the end of the day, when you had this big, huge police response, it's almost like it didn't matter if it was real shit or not. The result is the same. The place got shut down. It got all over the news. You got a crowd of people watching and trying to crane their necks, see what's going on over there at the police caution tape line. And you have reporters all over it. The guy's giving a press conference, you know, trying to look all professional and like he's really in control. And, you know, these guys feed off the shit. So I wonder if that's going to end up happening. Somebody has a spill of some of that baker's yeast somewhere, or something that ends up giving this thing a false positive. Because if it's got a 20% chance of going off, you know, because somebody spilled pancake mix, I mean, you know, you'd have to laugh at this shit. Can you imagine running up a $20,000 police bill, or $100,000, or however it is, much money they blow on this dumb shit, because somebody had a cut in the bottom of their pancake batter thing, and some idiot called it in as, I don't know, you know, you never know these days. What a bunch of shit. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed my programs. I want to make sure you guys are getting prepared for later, and everybody here needs to be a leader. You've got to have the information. These DC shows, guys, keep them around. I try to teach you very specific things in my show, and send me some letters. Did you like today's broadcast? Is there anything you would have liked me to cover? Shoot me an email. Do it through Tom. You know how to get a hold of him. tm_metzger@yahoo.com. And just tell Tom pass it on to Lone Wolf DC. He'll make sure I get it. And I'll cover whatever material you guys ask. I don't get too many letters, so whenever I get a letter, I make sure I mention it in one of my shows, you know. Or I have an email sent back through the grapevine. And just think, I think the way forward for us is to be extremely portable, to show up anywhere at any time, not be relying on the grid, have your own source of power, source of water, source of heat. If you had a fifth wheel parked out somewhere, one of those really small tow-behind trailers, storage container, just whatever. If you had it out somewhere, you could kind of use it as a little base of operations, a little get away from the crowd sort of thing. And I think everybody needs to start looking into that. And like Tom mentioned the other broadcast a minute ago, don't have a whole lot of guns in your house. I mean, hey, everybody loves guns here. But don't have too much. Pump action shotgun, a nice one, 12 gauge, and a good 357 or a Glock 17 or whatever it is you like. Nothing too outrageous, right? Nothing too outrageous. It won't look funny. If you're sitting on 10 crates of 7.62x39 and you got 4 or 5 AKs, they give you a hard time. So remember, you're all thought criminals. In fact, if you're listening to this show, you're a thought criminal right now. It doesn't matter if you do anything wrong. That's not relevant. What's relevant is they don't like you, and they're going to fuck with you. And they'll invent some shit just to give you a hard time. And, you know, they'll deny you bail. They'll do all kinds of bullshit. You guys got to be slick. You got to be above suspicion. Fake being a Jew. You know, act like a race mixer. You know, you're behind enemy lines. You know, no uniforms, babe. Don't have any Nazi stuff in your house. Get that out. If you want to have a SWA sticker flag, I would say have it in your little bunker out in the middle of nowhere, because you don't want to be caught with a fucking hot potato, all right? So, and I also say keep racial stuff away from firearms. Just like, you ever notice that drug dealers, when they have the drugs and the guns together, the cops hit them fucking harder? I think that's even legislated in the law. So if you got your SWA sticker and your Nazi uniform next to a bunch of legitimately owned AKs, expect a hard time. It's bad enough having the AKs on their own. To put in an evil context. Evil. You know. And remember, there's going to be lone wolf paranoia coming pretty soon. You're starting to hear that word catch on. All right? So that means you guys got to make sure you don't get that label put on you. All right? This whole thing, it's all about being anonymous. And we'll be the real invisible empire, right? The Klan called themselves that, but they're real obvious. So we got to be the submarines, and I really mean that. So get yourself together. Get portable. I mean, I'm not a big fan of desktop computers, the real big ones. I want you guys getting a laptop. I just think you could take that laptop and leave with it in the drop of a hat. You could store it up in the ceiling somewhere, in a fucking air duct. I mean, you could hide that damn thing anywhere. Try hiding a big-ass computer. That ain't going to work. So guys like us, man, is that useful. You can take it down to the local community college or whatever, use their internet for free, mooch off their shit, get a proxy server so you can disguise where you're going on the internet so nobody can see where, you know, what websites you're going to. Have it encrypted, of course. SSL encryption, that's what you want. SSL. Secure socket layer, that's what it's called. Or you can connect via VPN, virtual private network. That's a form of secure connection also. There's a lot of things you can do when you're mobile. And I want you guys to see about getting mobile. Have your 72-hour bag, all right? Got no excuse for not having some canned food, some beef jerky, a little first aid kit, a good knife, you know, like a good K-bar or one of those Leathermans, something. Guys, just have a capability. You got to do it now. I know a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what to do, but nothing bad's going to happen, so I don't have to worry about it yet. You are the other guy. It's going to happen to you. I'm pointing at you right now. Yep. You see that? Yeah, it's you. It's going to happen to you right there. So if you don't have your shit together, get it together. Get some ammo. Get a gun while it's legal. Get all your shit lined up in a row now. And don't forget, it's not all about guns. You know, you can have 50 million guns, and you're sitting there starving to death and thirsty as shit because you didn't plan for the food and water. Remember, when it comes to the Army, most of the stuff they spend their money on isn't guns. It's on clothing. It's on food. It's on medical treatment for their fighters. Remember, it's like, you know, 10% combatants, 90% you know, backup support, you know, guys in the behind the scenes. Don't forget all these other costs and these other things that you need to have set up going into this, all right? So don't just think guns. That's not enough. You got to have all the shit that goes with it, even though it's not sexy. You need boots and foot powder. All right? Five words, baby. I have nothing to say. Rahoa.
Well, there you go. There's $1 million worth of information on that show. We've got some more of DC Wolf stuff, too, but I'm telling you, keep a recording of that one, and keep it stuck away someplace to refer to. Yeah, that's it for today on Freya's Day, and like I say, it's a sad day when we've got all these idiots and these people over there in Normandy celebrating this war situation, the Great War, the Great Jew War. You notice it's only a great war when the Jews are heavily involved. So we got all these old white guys over there celebrating the murdering of German people and so forth and so on. And it's really sad. And then with a mulatto up there heading the parade, it's really, really sick. 14-5, and I'll see you tomorrow, Saturn's Day. And don't talk.
You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Hey! Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side. Always look on the right side of life. Always look on the right side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
First thing down to see, you know. Come from nothing, you know.